Michigan finally upsets Ohio State, the Packers and Patriots continue to roll, and some major coaching shakeups in college football. La Valley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the La Valley Sports Talk podcast, brought to you by the Soundline Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris La Valley. Hope you all are doing well and staying safe. As always, we'll kick it off with college football, and there's a lot to talk about, so let's jump right in. So, Michigan finally upset and stunned Ohio State, 42-27. Coach Harbaugh finally gets the monkey off his back and defeats his bitter rival. Michigan's vaunted defense showed up all game and slowed down the pass-happy Buckeyes. Michigan's running back, Hassan Haskins, inserted himself into the Heisman conversation with an incredible performance. He had 28 carries for 169 yards and 5 touchdowns. You cannot understate the significance of this win, not only for Michigan football, but for Harbaugh's legacy. This was I can't express how huge this was for Harbaugh. Now, I've been on the Harbaugh bandwagon since he was hired. I also jumped off the bandwagon a couple weeks ago when they lost to Michigan State, and I said, all right, maybe this isn't the place for Jim. It's not going to work out for him. And, you know, I'm kind of bummed out that I jumped ship the way that I did. It kind of makes this bittersweet, selfishly for me, because I wish I had hung on a little bit longer just so this way I could sit back and revel in how, you know, hey, it was good to be patient on Harbaugh. And unfortunately, I wasn't. I jumped ship like a lot of other people. I was like, you know what? This clearly is just not the place for him. He's not going to be able to get out of his own way. But look, it's not just that they won. It's the way that they won. It's the way that Michigan dominated Ohio State in every aspect of this football game, from coaching to running the ball down their throat and to playing some of the best defense they've played all season. This was by far the best Michigan football game I've ever seen, and I think has been played under Jim Harbaugh's tenure. Now, it's not over yet. They still have to beat Iowa this weekend in the Big Ten championship game, which I think they'll take care of, and then they will certainly be in the college football playoff. Moving on, Bama survives in 4 overtimes against Ole Miss, 24-22. Ole Miss's defense was in control for almost the entire game. Up until the last drive of the football game, Ole Miss had just completely shut down Alabama. And it was really the last 30 seconds of the ball game. They had neutralized Bama's offense. Up until the last 30 seconds of the football game, they had neutralized Bama's offense and kept Bryce Young, who is the Heisman frontrunner, the young QB, out of the end zone. And Young finally connected with under a minute left to tie the ball game. And once that happened, I mean, once Bama scored to tie it up, I sat back. I was watching this game pretty much from the third quarter on. I didn't see the first half. I just sat back and went, Bama's going to pull this out. You just knew. I've said it before, is the New England Patriots of college football. If you give them even the smallest chance to come back in a ball game, they always seem to find a way. It's so irritating and frustrating to watch if you're not a fan. Obviously, if you're a fan of the Patriots, you're a fan of Bama, you just kind of sit back and you're like, you revel in it because you know that you always have a chance. As long as Belichick's on the sideline or Saban's on the sideline, you've got a chance to pull out the ball game. And like clockwork, that's exactly what we saw on Saturday. Bama was able to figure it out, and in the end, they pulled off the victory, albeit by the skin of their teeth. Now, Bama survives this thriller. They avoid losing their chance to play in the college football playoff, and now that brings me to the playoff rankings. So as they stand right now, we have Georgia at 1, Michigan at 2. Michigan, again, leapfrogs all the way up to 2. Number 3 is Bama, number 4 Cincinnati, 5 is Oklahoma State, and 6 is Notre Dame. So this coming weekend is the SEC championship, the Big Ten, it's championship weekend. Now, if you look at the rankings, trying to figure out who's going to be in the college football playoff after the championship weekend. So here are the various scenarios, and I'm going to try not to sound super confusing here. So bear with me. All right, so again, so as we stand right now, you have Georgia, Michigan, Bama, Cincinnati. Those are your 4. All right. Georgia and Bama are playing each other in the SEC championship game. If Georgia wins, they're in. If Georgia loses, they're in. Okay, it's really just a matter at this point whether Georgia is the 1 seed or whether they're the 3 or the 4 seed. Maybe they'll be the 2 seed even if they lose. I don't know. But Georgia's now just playing for seeding in the playoff because they're far and away the best team in college football. They can afford this loss against Bama. The committee won't not put Georgia in the championship. Bama has to win in order to be in. If Bama loses, they're out. They're done. They will not be in. There is no going to be. There was the rumor initially of, oh, if Bama keeps it close against Georgia, that's just there's no way. You can't do it now, because Bama has shown over the past few weeks they've struggled. They've struggled against inferior opponents. This is not the same Bama team that we've seen in the past. So Bama, if Bama loses, they're out. If Michigan wins, they're in. If Michigan loses, there is no Big Ten representation, and that kind of opens the door to a lot of different scenarios. But let's assume Michigan wins. That then brings us to Cincinnati. Cincinnati obviously has to win to be in. If they lose, they're done. But there's no guarantee. Cincinnati is the one team that has to have Alabama lose. They have to see Bama lose. If Bama wins, I believe, as long as Oklahoma State wins the Big 12 championship game against Baylor, if Oklahoma State wins, Bama wins, Oklahoma State's going to find their way in. Cincinnati's going to find their way out because they're not part of the Power Conference. So because they're not one of the Power Five conferences, Cincinnati is not in there. We've talked about it before. The committee is probably going to pay homage to Oklahoma State because they're part of the Power Five. Cincinnati is not. They're the odd man out. They're going to be out, even though they're undefeated. And you can disagree with that all you want. Look, I think the committee is one of the most corrupt bodies in all of sports. The committee knows who they want in. Okay, they know who they want in at the beginning of the season, and they do everything in their power to try and put them in. Look, Notre Dame should not be sixth in the country, okay? That's just a power play. That's because of name recognition as far as Notre Dame's concerned. Okay, so just keep that in the back of your mind. Notre Dame has no business being this high up. If the committee could find a way to keep Alabama in, even if they lost, they would do it. That's just the way the committee works. The committee is heavy SEC bias, heavy Big Ten bias, and then everybody else can, whatever. So Cincinnati's hopes and dreams rest on Bama losing. And I 100% believe that. Now, obviously, there can be chaos, a bunch of teams losing. Michigan could lose, and Bama could lose, and Oklahoma State could lose, or Georgia could lose, and Michigan loses, and Oklahoma State loses, and then it's a free-for-all. You could see Oregon all of a sudden leapfrog up if they win for Pac-12 representation, because they could win the Pac-12 against Utah, which would be a rematch of Oregon losing to Utah a couple weeks ago. I mean, like, there's a bunch of chaotic scenarios, but for my money, the most realistic outcome of this coming weekend will be Michigan, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, and Georgia all winning. And then those four would be your representation for the college football playoff. Again, chaos could happen, but I think that if you're a betting man, that would be where I would put my money on, is Georgia winning, Michigan winning, Oklahoma State, and Cincinnati all winning, and all four of them ending up being your four representatives, for the playoff. Another great week in the NFL. You got to kick it off, unfortunately, with the game that hurt my soul. The Indianapolis Colts and Carson Wentz fall apart in the second half to lose against Tampa Bay 38-31. Brady, 226 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Carson Wentz, 306 yards, three touchdowns, two interceptions, and a lost fumble. The Bucs owned the second half, outscoring the Colts 24-7. Fournette was the difference maker in this ballgame, 100 yards rushing, three touchdowns, and one touchdown reception. The Colts, they went pass happy in the second half, and that's what killed them. I don't understand what Frank Reich was doing in the second half. I understand that they were throwing the ball really well in the first half. I get it. I do. Wentz was on fire in the first half. They were up by 10 going into halftime. It was great. But why they would move away from a running game when that's what carried them on their 5-game winning streak makes little to no sense. Jonathan Taylor had a historic performance last week against Buffalo. Why wouldn't you continue to do that? This falls on Frank Reich. This loss, for me, falls on the head coach that I love so much. And look, Carson Wentz didn't do himself any favors, all right? He fell apart. He threw up all over himself in the second half. He had three turnovers in the second half. He was playing a great first half. I was getting ready to start sending out texts to my buddies and being like, yo, check out my boy Wentz. He is back. This is Carson Wentz 2017 2.0 here. And then he just completely imploded. Just absolutely imploded in the second half. Now, this wasn't a game I was expecting the Colts to win. I picked the Bucs to win this football game. But this is the third time now? Yeah, third time. Baltimore and Tennessee are other two examples of the Colts being up big at halftime and then falling apart in the second half. This team can't close. Not expecting the Colts to win is one thing, But seeing that the Colts had an opportunity to beat the Bucs and do it in with relative ease, as they were doing in the first half, and then to completely fall apart. This is just a very disappointing loss. This is why I've been so hard on this team. It's great when they're winning. It's awesome to sit back and be like, holy crap, this team could actually be a playoff team. And as high as I was riding after last week's win against Buffalo, I am now riding that much low. Like, I am to the depths of despair again. Because even if we were to make the playoffs, I have no faith that this team can beat a playoff team. I just don't. I don't have the faith that they're going to do enough of the right things to win the ball game. And that falls on coaching. This falls on Frank. He's got to figure it out. You know, I put some blame on Carson Wentz. He made some stupid throws again. He had two interceptions. The first one was the stupid throw I'm talking about. The second one was a Hail Mary, so I don't count that. He threw a Hail Mary up at the end of the game. It got picked, whatever. Like, that is what it is. But the fumble and the initial pick, he threw in a double coverage. Like, it was just a stupid, it was a stupid throw. They were in field goal range. It was third and long. Rather than just taking a check down just to get your kicker just a little bit closer for an easier field goal, you bomb it into double coverage. Why? I understand you want to put the nail in the coffin. You're playing against Tom Brady, and I'm all about putting the nail in the coffin when you're playing Brady or you're playing Belichick. It doesn't matter. I get that. You want to just kind of solidify, okay, this is our game. We're winning this football game. And I can appreciate that. But don't make stupid fucking errors that then puts Brady right in position to come back and win the football game, because that's what he did. It's just aggravating. This team, I love my team, I do. But this team, this season has been so frustrating with the coaching decisions and the play calling decisions. And look, Wentz has had a great overall, Wentz has had a great season. But he has sucked in two football games that the Colts really should have won. And that's what's more disappointing than anything else for somebody who has been such a hardcore Carson Wentz supporter. To see this kind of crap happen over and over again this season, it just sucks. It really does. Moving on, the Patriots roll past the Titans 36-13. Jones had 310 yards passing with two touchdowns. Ryan Tannehill, 93 yards, one touchdown, one pick. The Patriots defense continues to play inspired football as they own the Titans passing game. Jones continues to improve and is the front runner for Rookie Offensive Player of the Year. And the Patriots now sit as the second overall seed in the AFC. The Titans have now proven that they can't win without Derrick Henry. Tannehill just isn't the same quarterback. He has little to no help with his two top receiving talents out. So while everyone wants to bury Ryan Tannehill, which 93 yards, one touchdown, one pick. I mean, that's just an anemic performance as an NFL pro. But he has literally no help. It's like the New York Jets offensive passing game out there. He has no receiving help whatsoever. Even if the Titans make the playoffs, which they probably will win the AFC South now by default because apparently the Colts can't figure it out. Even if Henry comes back, which there's a 50-50 shot that he does by playoff time, if Henry's not 100%, the Titans aren't winning. They're not going to win. They just won't. I mean, they'll be the 4 seed, which means they'll have to play the 5 seed. I mean, that could be anyone from the Chargers to what? Cincinnati. Man, they ain't going to beat Cincinnati in a good football game. They won't beat the Chargers either, man. They're not going to be able to keep up with the Chargers on offense. I don't see the Titans doing anything. To me, they're kind of like a lame duck team that's going to win a really bad division and get absolutely annihilated come playoff time. Raiders stunned the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, 36-33. Carr, 373 yards and one touchdown. Prescott, 375 yards, two touchdowns. This was easily the best game to watch on Thanksgiving. Not that that's saying too much, but this game was actually a lot of fun. It was exciting throughout. The Raiders prove that they still have a little bit of life left in them. Carr continues to prove that he's a top 10, bottom tier 2 quarterback in this league. I don't think the Raiders are going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're hanging around. Everyone's hanging around the AFC, so I mean, they could. They could by default because no one apparently wants to run away with that conference. But regardless, the Raiders are going to be a tough team moving forward. The Raiders showed a lot of heart. They showed that they're not going to lay down and just take it, which is awesome. I mean, the NFL is great when the Raiders are good. It's always been that way. The Dallas Cowboys, though, boy, are they in trouble. They have health issues all over the field. They have the second most, yes, I can say that. They have the second most incompetent. I was trying to think of if he's like third or fourth. Now, they have the second most incompetent head coach in the league, and it's not close. Mike McCarthy should be fired today. I've said it all season. After every Sunday, I'm telling you, Mike McCarthy has to go. He sucks. It's the dude just, he does not inspire confidence. They would be better off with Jason Garrett. The ginger-haired clapper, you know what, man? For all of his faults, at least he tried to inspire his team. Mike McCarthy just stands there on the sideline like a Macy's Day float and does nothing. Just does nothing. He's so pathetic to watch. And a lot of this for me brings me back to what Aaron Rodgers was always bitching about with him as a head coach. He inspires no confidence in anything. His Super Bowl ring shouldn't even count because he didn't earn it. He got it because he rode the wave of Aaron Rodgers. He clearly is not an offensive genius like people were trying to make it out to be for all those years in Green Bay. However, with all that being said, their biggest issue, more so than Mike McCarthy, is that Dak is regressing as the season has been moving forward. Don't let his stats fool you. All right, don't let his stats in this football game fool you, because he didn't play a great game for the three out of the last four games. He had numerous opportunities to put the game away, and once again, he came up short in big pressure moments. I'm not saying Prescott's not a franchise QB, but he's not elite. You can't call a QB elite who loses games to inferior opponents, especially at home. First, he did it with the Broncos. Now he's doing it with the Raiders. And look, the Cowboys have a favorable schedule moving forward. They play the Saints on Thursday, which would have been last night by the time this podcast airs. They play Washington football team, who's won three straight. They play them twice, the Giants, the Cardinals, and the Eagles. There's no reason why they can't finish the season 3-2. They should beat the Saints. I think they can split against Washington. They should be able to beat the Giants. Cardinals, they're playing the Cardinals the second last game of the season. If the Cardinals are just resting everybody, then they could beat the Cardinals with ease. And they should beat the Eagles. They're a better football team than the Eagles. But again, I don't understand what's going on with this franchise. I can't figure it out. But they better figure it out soon. Because if they somehow fall out of the playoffs, or they go 1-done in this postseason, it's going to be ugly in Dallas. And it should be. There's no reason why this team, for what all the skill players that they have, there's no reason why this team should not be contending for a Super Bowl. Green Bay Packers rout the Los Angeles Rams 36-28. Rodgers, 307 yards, 2 touchdowns. Stafford, 302 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. The Rams are in big trouble. They're in the midst of a 3-game losing streak. Stafford is clearly injured, and it's wreaking havoc on his accuracy. He's had six turnovers in his last three games. He's thrown three straight pick sixes in three straight games. He's missing wide open receivers in a manner that we've never seen before. And that one vaunted defense has been anything but. The defense is giving up an average of 31.6 points per game during this losing streak. Now, fortunately for them, they play the Jaguars next week. So that's a nice little gimme for you. But McVay still really needs to find a way to start pulling some of that magic out of his hat. Otherwise, this team could be 1-done come playoff time. And you want to talk about panic. You've got to be panicking if you're a Rams fan. You've got to be panicking if you're inside the Rams franchise right now. That organization, you've set yourself up for win now mode. And this team is not good. What you need to do is you need to figure out what's wrong with Stafford. Like, if you have to shelf Stafford for a couple weeks, do it. You have to do it. I understand that the 49ers are starting to win some football games, and you know, you're trying to keep pace with the Cardinals. Look, the Cardinals are winning that division, so you can kiss that goodbye. At this point, you're a playoff. You're a wild card team. If you look at your schedule and figure it out, you don't need to play. You don't need Matthew Stafford against the Jaguars to win. You got to look at your schedule and you got to figure it out. But as far as I'm concerned, you shelf Stafford for a couple weeks and get him right. Because if Stafford's not healthy going into the playoffs, you're screwed. You're not going to win. Your hopes and dreams, the whole point of bringing Matthew Stafford in was for Sean McVay to finally have the quarterback that he never had in Jared Goff. And if Stafford isn't healthy, well, then you have Jared Goff 2.0. Because that's honestly what Stafford looks like right now. He looks like Jared Goff. The way that he's throwing, I understand Stafford's ability is well above Jared Goff. But if you watch that game against the Packers, he was throwing balls like Jared Goff used to. Throwing behind receivers, throwing way ahead of receivers, throwing them into the ground. He's not healthy. And unfortunately, clearly that bye week wasn't enough for him to get right. So if I were the Rams, I would shelf Stafford for at least a couple weeks and try and see if we can get him right before the playoffs start. Moving on, the Packers right now are the best team in football. Their defense has been incredible. They've won despite numerous injuries to key skill players, both on offense and on defense. Oh, and they have the best quarterback in football right now, doing whatever he wants against opposing defenses. In any objective metric, Aaron Rodgers should be the leader for MVP, without question. Stafford's out. Brady has been inconsistent. Josh Allen's not there right now. And Kyler Murray hasn't played. I don't know how you can honestly be objective about it and not say Aaron Rodgers is the clear-cut MVP right now. Right now. The Packers are the best team in football. It's clear. They are the best team in football. They may not be the number one seed, but they are the best team in football. And Aaron Rodgers is playing the best at quarterback over the last few weeks. He won't win. So let's put that out there. He's not going to win because the media hates his guts. But the numbers don't lie, neither does the scoreboard here. The Packers are going to easily take the 2 seed and might be able to catch Arizona for the number 1 seed in the NFC. Their remaining games are Bears, Ravens, Browns, Vikings, and Lions. I mean, they could easily go 4-1. They possibly could go 5-0. They're going to destroy the Bears and the Browns. The Ravens depends on what Ravens team shows up. The Vikings, I think they're going to kick the crap out of the Vikings. The Aaron Rodgers is going to want revenge, and it's the Lions. Jordan Love could possibly beat the Lions. So, I mean, Rodgers could possibly even sit in that game, and the Packers could win. Nah, I'm just kidding. Jordan Love can't win shit. He sucks. But the point is that this team could go 4-1, probably 5-0. And Aaron Rodgers is easily the best quarterback in football once again, and the Packers are the best team. With all due respect to the Patriots, who are the second best team. Other news and notes around the league. The Baltimore Ravens survive over the Browns 16-10. Lamar Jackson threw for 4 interceptions, but threw a touchdown pass at the end of the game to win it. This game is more about the Browns than the Ravens. Baker Mayfield, once again, sucked. He only had one touchdown pass. He had another turnover. Look, Mayfield is clearly injured, and he shouldn't have played in this game. Okay, he's 50% at this point? He looks terrible. He doesn't look healthy. And I need someone to explain to me how Case Keenum is not a better option than Baker Mayfield at this point. Case Keenum is pretty damn close to Baker Mayfield when Baker Mayfield's healthy. Baker Mayfield at 50%, Case Keenum is obviously an upgrade. Coach Stefanski's job should be kind of on a hot seat right now. Because the way he's evaluating his team, the fact that he's sitting there as a head coach and watching Mayfield over the last few weeks, knowing that he's injured and still putting him out there and saying, nope, he gives us the best chance to win, I question your abilities to coach then. Because there is no way in any universe that Baker Mayfield right now is a better option for this football team than Case Keenum. They would have routed the Ravens with Case Keenum. The way that Lamar played last night. Again, they only scored 10 points. 10 points when Lamar threw 4 picks. 4 picks? And off of those 4 picks, you score 3 points? And you're telling me that Case Keenum couldn't at least put up 10? Come on. That doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sorry. Coach Stefanski really does need to be... His job really does need to start being in question. And I was listening to Dan Orlowski the other day. He talked about how at one point in this game, the Browns ran the same play 3 times in a row. 3 times in a row. In the NFL, you're running the same play 3 times in a row. That's high school shit. You don't do that in the NFL. This team is just, it's a downward spiral. It's not going well. And I don't know how the Browns recover. At least not this year. I don't see them recovering at all. This is just not going well. The Giants embarrassed the Philadelphia Eagles 13-7. The Giants defense was incredible. They held the Eagles scoreless through the first three quarters. Hurst threw three interceptions and only passed for 129 yards through the air. The Eagles really need to get over their pride and realize that they're not going to win many games with Hurts at quarterback. I'm going to sit back here and pat myself on the back continuously because I said that from day one. He's a D3 college version of Lamar Jackson. Okay, people can try and dress Jalen Hurts as though he is Lamar Jackson-esque. Yeah, look, the dude can scramble just as good as anybody. He's not as good as Lamar. But yeah, man, he's certainly dangerous with his feet. He's not dangerous with his arm, though. He's not accurate. That was the problem with him in college. Hence why Bama ended up sitting him in a national championship game. Dude's not accurate. He's got a decent arm, but he's not great. And I'm sorry, 129 yards through the air and three picks against the Giants? Come on, man. Come on. Especially with an opportunity to put some heat on the Cowboys. The Eagles, they had an opportunity to really start putting a little bit of heat on Dallas, and they blew it against the Giants. So, this kills the Eagles' chances, by the way, of not only catching the Giants, but of making the playoffs. Like, they had a 5% shot of making the playoffs. That's done. They're done. They're dead and buried. And frankly, as far as I'm concerned, the Eagles deserve it after what they did to Carson Wentz. Moving on. The Bengals rout the corpse of Big Ben and his Steelers 41-10. Bengals own the game from the jump. Burrow threw for 198 yards, one touchdown, and one rushing TD. Big Ben threw two picks, including a pick six. The Steelers' season is officially over. They can't win with Ben at quarterback, so unless Tomlin makes the switch, can't take the Steelers seriously. And why Mike Tomlin hasn't made the switch at this point is beyond me. It's not fun watching Big Ben at this point. Now, I was listening to Cowherd the other day, and he made the comment, and it made sense. He's like, this is how it had to end for Big Ben. Because had Ben played well this season, he all of a sudden would have decided, hey, I want to come back. And he and his agent would have tried to get a longer contract, another couple years, get some more money out of the Steelers. So the fact that he's clearly falling apart before everyone's eyes, Ben's got no shot at being able to get the Steelers to re-sign him again for another sort of extension. This is it. With that being said, talking about the Bengals here, the Bengals bounced back and won an important divisional game to keep pace with the Ravens. They're currently sit in the sixth seed, with remaining games against the Chargers, the 49ers, the Broncos, the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Browns. That's not an easy road for anybody, especially a Cincinnati Bengals team that I still think is still got a little bit of their sea legs under them. They're still trying to figure things out. The positive thing for the Bengals, though, is you've got a stud at quarterback in Joe Burrow. Man, that dude's everything you want that you were looking for in a number one quarterback. So that's a positive. Do I think the Bengals are going to make the playoffs? I don't. I just think that remaining schedule is a gauntlet. But they have a lot to build on moving forward. And look, that's more than anybody could have said about Cincinnati, at least over the last few years anyway. All right, let's go to my picks here. Last week I was 3-1, just giving you the money line. I have the point spreads again because last week was boring. I'm not telling you that you have to go to the booth with my picks here and actually bet on them, but just giving you the money line just wasn't as much fun. So anyway, I've got Bucks at Falcons, Chargers at Bengals, Ravens at Steelers, and Patriots at Bills. Bucks at Falcons. Bucks are a 10-point favorite. I'd take the Falcons. The Bucks will probably win the football game, but they're not going to win by 10 points. Get out of here. These games are always closer than they should be. The Falcons are that annoying team that just kind of hang around. Matt Ryan will keep them in the game up until late, and then he'll throw a stupid interception or something because he's unfortunately falling apart. The Chargers at the Bengals. The Chargers are a 2.5-point dog. Take the Chargers. Take the Chargers. I'm taking the Chargers. I always take the Chargers here. You don't have to, but Justin Herbert to me is still arguably a top five quarterback in the league. And I like the Chargers team more than the Bengals. Ravens and Steelers. Ravens are a 3-point underdog. This game might be closer than we think. Neither the Ravens or the Steelers are playing good football. But I would take the Ravens. I would take the Ravens at -3. I just think the Ravens are a much better football team. If the Ravens lose this football game, then we got some holes in that AFC North. My goodness. If the Ravens blow this game. I don't get the Ravens team, by the way. I don't understand it. Lamar Jackson's been hot and cold all season. The Ravens 1 week can look like the best team in football, and then the next week they can look like one of the worst teams in football. I don't understand this franchise at all, or this team at all, rather, I should say. But I would definitely take the Ravens at -3. And then finally, the Patriots at Bills. This is the game of the week, Monday Night Football. The Bills are a 3-point favorite at home. I'm going to take the Bills because I think the Bills need this football game more so than the Patriots do, but I don't feel good about it. Like, if I was going to bet on any one of these games, I would stay away from the Patriots-Bills game. I do not feel good about taking the Bills in this game, but I'm going to take the Bills in this game just because I do. I think the Bills need it more so than New England. New England is rolling. They look like they are the best team in the AFC, second best team in all of football. I don't know. I'm going to take the Bills. I believe that the Bills, there's still something inside of them, some sort of fire that's burning, and they will at least pull this game out. Look, the Bills have to have this game too, by the way. If the Bills lose this football game, I'm not saying that the Bills season's over because they'll still make the playoffs, but the Bills season's over. All the expectation, all the hype around this team that they would be a Super Bowl, not only a Super Bowl contender, but very likely be a Super Bowl representative for the AFC, that's dead and buried if they lose this football game. Because I just think at that point, they're going to be reeling. I don't understand how a football team with all that type of hype can come back from the depths, especially when they've never been there before. All right, they've never been the favorite. Josh Allen has never had the pressure that he has had coming into this season on his shoulders before. So I think if the Bills are going to make a stand, this is the game that they have to do it. So again, to recap real quick, I've got the Bucks, the Chargers, the Ravens, and the Bills all winning this week. All right, so we've had some crazy coaching changes going on in college football. And the fan bases that are freaking out over these coaches moving on to greener pastures and the fan bases that are like freaking out about these coaches coming in, I think both are ridiculous. And usually when I do my Everything is Stupid, I focus in on the fan bases, or I focus in on who I think is being stupid, which are the fan bases in this case. I kind of want to talk about the coaches and why I think that one of them is really good for the position that they're in and the other one is going to flame out and it's going to be ugly. All right. Lincoln Riley is heading from Oklahoma to USC. Brian Kelly is leaving Notre Dame for LSU. Now, I put up their resumes. Lincoln Riley is USC is his second head coaching job. He's considered the quarterback whisperer. He coached Baker, Kyler, Jalen Hurts. All three of those are NFL starters. Two of them won the Heisman. 5 years as Oklahoma head coach, 55-10 record, 4 Big 12 championships, and he was 1-3 in bowl games. All right. I think Lincoln Riley is going to be incredible at USC. I'm not saying USC is going to win a national championship under Riley's tenure, because honestly, to me, this is a stepping stone for Riley. Riley's going from Oklahoma to USC, and then he's going to go, I think he'll be in the NFL within the next 3 to 4 years. Like, this is just a higher profile job to all but secure him a spot somewhere in the NFL. I think that's all this is for him. I think what he's going to do, though, is he's going to make the Pac-12 a desirable conference to play in again. That's what he's going to do, is he's going to bring new life to USC. He's going to be able to recruit his ass off. And all those players from Southern California that were going to places like Ohio State, Bama, LSU, and the like sprinting to the SEC or the Big Ten, are now going to stay in Southern California to play for him. I think that's what his presence is going to do for that school and for that conference. And then you look at Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's leaving Notre Dame for LSU. LSU is his fifth head coaching job. He's been at Notre Dame since 2010. He's 92-39 as Notre Dame head coach. His overall head coaching record is 263-96-2. He's 6-5 in bowl games and 0-2 in the college football playoff games. Brian Kelly has never won a big game in his life. He wasn't successful at Cincinnati. He was not successful in Notre Dame. Now, again, this is his fifth. Again, so his other four places, but the two high-profile ones that he had were Cincinnati and Notre Dame. He never won a big game. He doesn't win against top 10 opponents, which is why him going to LSU makes no sense. And he claims that the reason why he's going to LSU and leaving Notre Dame is because he believes that LSU gives him the best shot at winning a national championship. That is one of the biggest lies I've ever heard in my life. Just say you were going for the money, bro. Just say you were going for the money. LSU gave you $90 million. So he doubled what your contract was with Notre Dame. So, which I'm not saying Brian Kelly shouldn't go for the money. Dude, go for the fucking money. Like, $90 million. Go take $90 million. You'd be stupid not to. But don't lie and say that LSU gives you the better chance to win a national championship, because it doesn't. The SEC is the toughest conference in all of college football. Notre Dame wasn't in a conference. They got to pick and choose who they played. And what's even more of a lie, this is why it's even more of a lie, rather, I should say, you were in the college football playoff last year, albeit you shouldn't have been in because you suck every time you play. And this is when I've been railing against Notre Dame getting back into the playoff, it's been because of Brian Kelly as the coach, not because of Notre Dame as the program. It's been because they were under the tutelage of Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's team right now is ranked sixth. They have a shot at making the college football playoff this year, for the second year in a row. So how can you say that by going to LSU, you have more of an opportunity to win a national championship when you're on the cusp this year and you were just in the playoff last year and you were in the playoff 3 years prior to that or 4 years prior to that? What are you talking about? There is no, you have no guaranteed path to the championship at LSU. You have Oklahoma and Texas both joining the SEC, which is going to make the SEC even more of a gauntlet than it already is. And you have to compete against Georgia, Bama, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Auburn. And you're going to sit there and go, yeah, that's a much easier road than what I have here at Notre Dame. That's bullshit. The other issue is, like I said before, Brian Kelly's never won a big game in his life. LSU, look at what LSU just did to Ed Orgeron. The man won a national championship 2 years ago. 2 years ago, the man won a national championship and he's out on his ass. LSU is not, like the SEC in general, but LSU especially, Bama and others, they expect you to win and win immediately and be successful from the jump. And if you're not, you're gone. Brian Kelly, I don't think is going to last at LSU more than 3 years, because you can't win big games. Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. People want him out. Jimbo Fisher won a national championship at Florida State. And because Texas A&M hasn't competed for a national championship over the last few years, people are already clamoring for him to get out. Brian Kelly doesn't have a national championship to his name. Again, the man's been 0-2 in the college football playoff. He has no resume to be able to sit back and go, hey, I'm a champion. Or, hey, I've won big games in my career. Because he hasn't. He hasn't. This move to me by LSU is baffling. Absolutely baffling. You had opportunities to go after a bunch of other coaches, and you took Brian Kelly? Look, I've never been a Brian Kelly fan, so my bias is definitely coming out in this segment, and I get that. But the resume speaks for himself. It just does. It speaks for itself. I think I said himself, sorry. The resume speaks for itself. And I don't like Brian Kelly because clearly he's a liar. He just lied. This is also the second time in his career where he has snuck out on his team on the eve of them playing in a bowl game or having the chance to make it to the playoff. Again, Notre Dame is still sitting around. If there's chaos this weekend, Notre Dame could find themselves in the college football playoff. Now, I think Notre Dame would be better off without Brian Kelly as the head coach if they make the college football playoff, because I don't think Brian Kelly has the stones to actually win a big game. But this is, again, he did it in Cincinnati, and he's doing it now at Notre Dame, where he doesn't even have the respect for the team that he's coaching to stick it out for the full remainder of the season. He left like a thief in the night for the second time. That tells you all you need to know about Brian Kelly's character. Again, I don't begrudge any head coach moving on for greener pastures, for being at a school for a number of years and feeling like, look, I've done the best that I can here. It's time for me to move on. That's fine. But at least wait to the end of the fucking season. Like, the reason why the Lincoln Riley thing is I'm okay with is because Oklahoma's not making the college football playoff. They're out of it. They're done. Them losing to Oklahoma State solidified them that all they were going to have is just a bowl game. So that's one thing. And if Notre Dame didn't have a shot or a prayer in hell to make the college football playoff, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But they do. And to me, again, that just shows you who Brian Kelly is as a person. And I believe that that has some sort of reflection onto why Brian Kelly doesn't truly have the stones to win a big game. So for the last word segment this week, I thought it'd be interesting to reevaluate the way that we view three quarterbacks, specific quarterbacks in the NFL, and how we had certain expectations for them coming into the season and where we believed that they would be by the end of the season. And now that we're more than halfway through the NFL season, I think that we have a pretty good idea of who they are and possibly who they are moving forward. So the three quarterbacks I want to look at are Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, and Baker Mayfield. Russell Wilson is, I think, the toughest person to really evaluate because I've been so high on Wilson over the years, and I've said that he should have won an MVP a couple years ago. I know that Matt had him as his favorite to win MVP this season. I don't think Russell Wilson's a tier one quarterback anymore. I don't think you can put him in that category. And here's why. The Seahawks weren't winning games with him prior to his injury. They've been even worse since he got back. Last three games, 56.1% completion percentage, 615 yards, two touchdowns, two picks. He's averaging 205 yards per game. That's abysmal. That's just bad. That's bad. That Washington game, yeah, good for him. He threw two touchdown passes. He still struggled in that game. You have too many offensive weapons to be this bad. I'm sorry. I don't give a shit if you're somewhat injured or not. If you're that injured where you're playing this poorly and you want to blame it on the injury, then you shouldn't be on the football field, man. Like, you can't have it both ways for the Russell Wilson defenders out there. You can't. You can't sit there and go, well, dude, he's injured. Okay, then sit him because he's not playing well. He's not winning. He's not helping the team win. So either he's healthy enough to play or he's not healthy enough to be on the field. And if he's not healthy enough to be on the field, then why is he on the field? Why? Doesn't make any sense. So I think Russell Wilson is showing us that while he's still a franchise quarterback, I'm not saying he's not, but I don't think that you can put him in the upper echelon of the Brady, the Rodgers, the Mahomes, the Josh Allens, the Kyler Murrays. I don't think you can put him in that category anymore. Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott coming into this season, I had questions about his health, but everyone was talking about, look, man, this dude's an elite quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback. He's just not. And we've seen enough from Dak Prescott now over the years where he is not an elite level quarterback. Now, he's beat up this season. He beats up on lesser opponents, but he struggles against playoff teams. This season, his stats against the four playoff teams that he's had to play. Now, these are four playoff teams that are currently in the playoffs as it stands right now. Six touchdowns, five interceptions. The offense averages 23 points per game. Against the six non-playoff teams, 13 touchdowns, two interceptions. And the offense, averages 35.5 points per game. Numbers don't lie. Dak Prescott can beat up on all the crappy teams he wants. That doesn't make him elite QB. It's funny. Dak Prescott gets a lot of credit for a lot of the games that they win, and his stats are pretty nice if you look at them. They're pretty gaudy. You want to know who else beats up on lesser opponents for the most part? Kirk Cousins. Just saying. I'm not saying that Dak Prescott isn't more talented than Kirk Cousins, but as far as the level of play that we see consistently, Kirk Cousins beats up on all the non-playoff teams, looks real good against non-playoff teams, and then when the lights shine the brightest and you got to play a good team, his numbers aren't so great. So for all those that I say Dak Prescott's a top five quarterback in the league, you're wrong, number one. But number two, he has never shown in his career that not only that he's not a top five, but that he's not elite. He has all the talent to be that. But I think that we have to start realizing that that's just not in Prescott's DNA. And finally, Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield is not a franchise quarterback. Take the injury out of the equation. Okay, so if you look at his stats for the first nine games of this season, through the Patriots game where he was injured, okay, his stats were this: 1,990 yards, which is an average of 221 passing yards per game, nine touchdowns, and four interceptions. For the season, Baker Mayfield's stats are 62.2 percent completion percentage, 2,413 yards, 11 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. For reference, Taylor Heinicke, Teddy Bridgewater, and Jalen Hurts all have better completion percentages, more passing yards, and touchdown passes than Baker Mayfield. And just for even further perspective, Jameis Winston, who hasn't played since week 7, has thrown 3 more touchdown passes than Mayfield in 4 less games this season. I'm sorry. Look, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the biggest Baker Mayfield homer you could find for years in college, leading into the NFL. I said he should be the number one pick. He's going to change the scope of the Browns franchise. I even made the ludicrous statement that had LeBron James stayed in Cleveland, Baker Mayfield eventually was going to overshadow LeBron because Baker was going to win it. Now, this was prior to LeBron winning the championship in Cleveland, that Baker Mayfield was going to win a championship before LeBron James, and he was becoming the face of Cleveland because of what he was going to be able to do for Cleveland, for the Browns, rather. That's how stupid I was and dumb I was. I believed so heavy in this dude and thought he was the second coming, which is why I am now so hard on him, because I bought in hook, line, and sinker that this guy had the stuff, and he doesn't. He just doesn't, man. He's not good. I'm not saying he can't be a starter in this league, but to me, he's got to be more of a nomad type of player, like somebody who bounces from pillar to post. When he's kind of like, to me, almost like a journeyman Ryan Fitzpatrick, or like that should be his trajectory moving forward in the NFL, where he goes in and he's kind of a stopgap for a team while they try and figure their shit out, where they sign him for a year or two, pay him $18, $19 million a year, something in that range, while they try and figure out what they want to do at quarterback. That, to me, should be his future in the league. The Browns are a quarterback away from being a successful playoff Super Bowl caliber team. And Baker Mayfield, I'm sorry, he's holding them back. The Browns have a tough decision to make this offseason, but if I were them, if they want to re-sign him for another year, do it. Sign him for the year. Because there really aren't that talented quarterbacks coming out of the draft this season. So if you just want to kind of hold on to him for one more year, do it. But after next season, it's time to move on. It's time to find somebody better, because the Browns have all the potential to be successful. And unfortunately, the quarterback is the reason why they haven't been. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the LaValle Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. I greatly appreciate it. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it. That's all I have for you this week. Hope you all be well. Stay safe. Talk to y'all again next week.